Within each of our clients, we'd not developed anything specifically to look after the needs of CEOs and their senior executive teams. These executives have a lot more sophisticated and different requirements than our most common users, who tend to be frontline cinema staff and support office managers. And so what we wanted to do was compile data that we drew from the wealth of their own information and make it available in real time and turn that raw data into something insightful so that we can set them up for success. And so what we looked at was all the data that we hold on their behalf and tried to bring it together and tell a story that was useful for them.
This is the Box Office Podcast. I'm Daniel Aria, the editorial director of Box Office Pro, the pulse of theatrical exhibition, here once again with my colleague and co-host Rebecca Pauly, deputy editor of Box Office Pro. And in this week's episode, we've got a special guest joining us from Vista Group, the Chief Product Innovation and Marketing Officer, Matthew Liebman, joining us in our feature segment for this week, talking everything on the innovation front for Vista as we head into CinemaCon in only a couple of weeks now. Matthew and I discuss every topic under the sun in terms of digital innovation, and a lot of the things that he sees are going to be changing for cinemas thanks to the latest digital revolution in e-commerce and software solutions. That's coming up in our feature segment. But before that, we've got Box Office to go over some industry highlights. We had a good opening weekend here, Rebecca. A $45 million start from Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. That's $1 million higher than the prior entry in this franchise, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Nice little performance here. I think the last three Ghostbusters movies have opened between $44 and $46 million. Not bad.
Yeah, it's a consistent, reliable franchise. I mean, I think Paul Feig was a big deal in terms of causing people online to lose their minds. It was definitely a much talked about film.
That was the 2016 reboot with an all-female cast, which apparently was something that is
people flipped out over.
Very difficult for people to understand why something like that could be made. It was seen at the time, I think it was sold. I don't think it was seen at that. It was sold as a financial failure at the time it opened, pretty much at the same pace that Ghostbusters Afterlife and Frozen Empire did. We're not talking about those movies as disappointments. It's a consistency with bringing back this Ghostbusters series that I don't know if we can say they're good returns, and I don't know if we can say they're stagnant returns. How do you fall in terms of reading these figures?
I mean, it kind of depends on what the budgets for the films were, right? I mean, is this a matter of films that were relatively inexpensive to make in terms of the grosses, and thus maybe the expectations aren't so high? It seems like the franchise kind of falls into that category. Obviously, not of like the mid-range budget film. It is a big blockbuster, but it feels on the lower end of the budget range for that blockbuster. You're not Netflix out there like tossing $200 million at Scorsese.
Exactly. You know how much money these movies make. You know, we mentioned 2021, that movie opened to $44 million, made $129 million domestically in its theatrical run. Globally, made around $200 million. The one in 2016, the reboot, opened to $46 million, makes $128.3 million domestically and $229 million worldwide. So we have this right under $130 million benchmark on the domestic level. We're going to expect the same from Frozen Empire, to be quite honest, looking at just how it is falling really in line with this franchise.
This is
and worldwide,
easiest.
$200 million plus, not bad.
This is like the most steady franchise to predict since Venom and the Venom sequel earned, I think, the exact same amount.
The exact same amount, right? So we have a good consistency here at the box office with Ghostbusters. It's always good to have a new film open above $40 million. We've had that now for a number of weeks, a $40 million plus number one film in the market. Looking elsewhere in the market last weekend, Rebecca, something that we always like to highlight and mention because we are both horror nerds. Three horror movies in the top 10, Immaculate, Late Night with the Devil, and Imaginary. Immaculate opening in fourth place from Neon with $5.3 million out of I'm not sure why you would release this in 2,300 screens. I don't know. I feel this one could push for more. Hopefully it gets an expansion next weekend.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say this is a wide release. It's more of a moderate one.
This is
but fourth place is good.
This is something that, I mean, definitely I think they've latched on to the star power of Sydney Sweeney in terms of marketing. I mean, you look at Neon, they do tend to enjoy a slow rollout. Definitely it's something that was kind of semi on my radar before it came out. And now it's something that, you know, Eric and I are planning to go see it.
Elsewhere, we also had another horror title hit the top 10 with Late Night with a Devil from IFC Films, a $2.8 million opening weekend from only 1,000 screens. Now, IFC Films wasn't promoting this as a wide release. IFC known more for staggered rollouts. A very good 2.7K per screen average coming in at number 6. It's great to see IFC Films in the top 10. It's great to see a film like this perform after I keep on seeing it in my targeted social media mm-hmm. ad feed.
Like,
there's
oh.
a lot of viral ads for this, very heavy
they
online.
They are really doing a great job on marketing this one. According to a friends of the podcast, Jesper Bach, who used to be with ISC Films, though now he is not, he said on Twitter that this has been the largest earning, highest grossing opening weekend for both ISC and Neon. So definitely a good one. I'm excited to go see Late Night with the Devil. There's a film from a few years back that has a similar kind of retro TV, you know, vibe called the WNUF Holiday Special, directed by, I believe, Chris LaMartina. That's a really, they recreate like bad 80s, the type of commercials you would see on like local TV. In like 1987 or something.
And talking about 80s nostalgia, late 70s, early 80s, we've got a Star Wars re-release marathon, but it's not the Star Wars you're thinking of. It's the Star Wars I don't like.
It's all of them. It's all of
them. Wait,
Star
no,
Wars.
It's all of them.
All Star
so
Wars.
So the Star Wars I do like, the Star Wars I don't like,
mm-hmm.
and how about the Star Wars TV shows? Like or even
ish.
Like the Disney ones. Is like Solo coming back to theaters? What's going on here, Rebecca?
So we previously knew that on Star Wars Day, May the 4th be with you, Disney was re-releasing Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, back into theaters for its 25th anniversary. As to the TV shows sort of thing, they are also doing a little sneak peek of the upcoming or one of the upcoming series. So that's definitely, you know, something to eventize it, to invite people to come back into the cinemas to see what is objectively an awful movie that for some reason nostalgia has convinced people is anything other than 100%. I don't want to, this podcast is going to end up 3 hours long if I start going in on the Star Wars prequels, but in 13 theaters around the country, they are actually going to be hosting a Star Wars marathon of the three trilogies. So not Solo, not Rogue One, but episodes 1 through 9, it lasts with breaks like over 23 hours.
Wow.
We've seen that. So some press releases have come in from some of the chains that have a theater screening this marathon. And looks like they're really leaning into it. Same as, you know, happened with Taylor Swift. You're taking something that's kind of special and adding, you know, extra special menu items, special photo ops. One of them, let me see, which one was this? Showcase Cinemas is having something called Yoda Yoga to help you stretch between films.
Yoda Yoga.
Yoda Yoga.
Oh, that is wonderful. We have to write Mark and Rebecca, the marketing executives over at Showcase. I love that.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
really good. What happens at Yoda Yoga?
I'm deathly curious. If someone goes to the Star Wars marathon at the showcase in Dedham, Massachusetts, please do let us know.
I've been to that theater, very gorgeous theater. If you're going to do a Star Wars marathon, you want to do it at a nice theater. That's a good one.
And if you're in the Utah area, the Megaplex Theater's Jordan Commons location is doing it, pairing it with photo ops, you know, food and beverage, unlimited popcorn. So you're just all day eating popcorn and drinking Coke. That's pretty much my dream. And then also, you know, we've heard from Marcus and Alamo Drafthouse, both of which have a location among the few selected to screen this marathon. I mean, we know Alamo always kind of goes all out with these special events. They're doing, you know, special merch that you can choose to buy, very exclusive. Marcus is rolling out like a breakfast buffet that that has Star Wars, like Leia rolls and Bantha breakfast wrap. And I love a stupid Star Wars pun.
Let's talk about what's coming up next weekend. But before we do, we want to say a big thank you to this week's sponsor, the Vista Group. Founded in New Zealand, Vista Group powers the global film industry by providing industry-leading tech solutions, operating in over 100 countries. With brands including Vista, VC, Movio, Numero, Max, Flix, and Pouster, Vista Group's expertise covers cinema management software, moviegoer engagement and marketing, sales channels, film distribution software, box office reporting, creative studio solutions, and the Flix movie, cinema, and streaming website and app. A huge thank you to our friends at Vista Group. And to learn more, just wait until our feature segment in this episode in the second half, where I'll be speaking with the company's own Chief Marketing, Innovation, and Product Officer, Matthew Liebman, who goes into everything that the Vista Group is taking over to CinemaCon and some of their latest innovations that they previewed at their convention in New Zealand. From New Zealand, let's talk about monsters, because that's what we've got coming up this weekend with the release of Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. I don't know if that's how I'm supposed to say this. Is it Godzilla times Kong, Godzilla and Kong? We don't know. We just read what they give us. It's called Godzilla, the letter X in lowercase, Kong, colon, the new empire.
The trailer, like, X, and then it twists, so it's a plus, because last movie they were fighting, but this movie they're bros and allied. I don't know, but I do know, I mean, we can go over our predictions for how much this movie is going to open to, but I will just say, as someone who, I don't even really watch a lot of network TV, so I'm not seeing the commercials, but I am seeing a lot of marketing for this, like Warner Brothers seems to be going all out, like special, you know, special merch, special popcorn tub. And I mean, this is one I'm probably gonna get out to see it. It's a big screener.
Yeah, they're going big on this. And this MonsterVerse that Warner Brothers has going on has had, let's say, diminishing returns, we have to say it objectively, but there's a little bit of nuance to the numbers. It was launched in 2014 with Godzilla that opened with $93 million domestically, made $200 million in its theatrical run in North America, crossed the $500 million benchmark worldwide. That occurred again in 2017 with Kong Skull Island, opened lower domestically, opened to $61 million in North America, $168 million domestic run, but the overseas number lifted this to $561 million worldwide. So 2017, Kong Skull Island, that is the high benchmark for this type of movie.
And in my opinion, it's the high benchmark of the franchise in terms of it's the one I like the best. So
well, there you go. It worked. Yeah. Now, it gets a little interesting here. Godzilla King of the Monsters comes out in 2019. That opens to $47 million in North America and ends up making $110 million domestically. Worldwide, it ends up at $383 million. So that gives us something to get worried about, right? It's a big drop-off. It doesn't get to the benchmark of 150 plus domestically. It gets nowhere near the $500 million mark.
But
worldwide.
Daniel, maybe the next Godzilla movie will have a smooth path to theaters and will end up putting everyone's mind at ease.
No, we need like a big like buzzer here that just like the wah wah pandemic sound, right? For all of these movies that get impacted. Not only wah wah pandemic, is this one of those movies that went day and date?
It was
on HBO Max. It was one of the first, right?
That movie, Godzilla versus Kong, directed by Adam Wingard, who's returning for this next one. I think that, along with Dune, was one of the movies that really brought a lot of people out to cinemas for the first time. I know it was the second movie I saw back in the theater. I went with a couple of friends who, for them, it was their first time back in like a year and a half. Saw it at the IMAX. There was a good smattering of people. That movie, I think, obviously everyone would have preferred in a perfect world for the pandemic not have happened, for her to have had theatrical exclusivity, but I think it did the best with what it could, with what it had.
I think it really overperformed, and you just have to look at the comparative figures here between the 21 Godzilla versus Kong and the 19 Godzilla King of the Monsters. $32.2 million opening weekend domestically. Understandable, right? A huge drop off because it's early in the pandemic recovery effort. So it goes even lower than Godzilla King of the Monsters did. Domestically, it almost goes head to head. It ends up making nearly $101 million in North America, while the 2019 installment made $110 million. So even though you had a drop off here and you had the pandemic, it almost ends up in an even ground. But worldwide, here is the detail as to why we can be surprised by the performance of the next installment. $468 million global for 21's Godzilla vs. Kong. Significantly above the $383 million worldwide of 2019's Godzilla King of the Monsters. So it's not the $500 million benchmark, but I don't think it is out of reach for this entry coming out this weekend from Warner Brothers. Our domestic forecast, I think, is pretty much in line with the 2019 numbers when we look at how this can succeed or not succeed in North America. Right now, we are predicting a range between $45 and $55 million on an opening weekend for Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire. Domestically, we expect that to run out between, let's say, $95 to $150 million. You know, on the lower end, it wouldn't crack what that $100 billion benchmark domestically that these films have in the past. We expect it to get there, maybe not get the numbers like we saw in 2017 or 2014.
But it's a different industry.
It's a different industry, but it can still overperform the 21 and 19 titles domestically. Overseas, that's where I think this title can really grow. And that's why I think the $500 million benchmark on Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire, isn't out of sight. And I think that big push on marketing that we're seeing domestically here in general media, Rebecca, from Warner Brothers, is indicative of the potential it has. Dune has been selling great on premium large format. It still has premium large format screens, even to this day, last I checked. But at this point, I think we're ready to turn the page. The studio is certainly ready to turn the page. Mm-hmm. And Godzilla X Kong is ready to capitalize on that.
Yeah.
And as we said, that is coming out this weekend. So don't forget to check out boxofficepro.com on Sunday to read the full performance of Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire. But Rebecca, that about does it for us here in the news segment. Now coming up in our feature interview, we've got Matthew Liebman, the Chief Product Innovation and Marketing Officer over at Vista Group. That conversation is coming up after the break. And we are back here on the Box Office Podcast with Matthew Liebman, the Chief Product Innovation and Marketing Officer at Vista Group, and also a co-host of the Behind the Screens podcast that the Vista Group puts out. That's a fantastic podcast on the film industry. Anyone in distribution, exhibition, or that is interested in either of those topics, I highly, highly recommend it. It's definitely on my must-listen-to list. Comes out every Tuesday. That's how I like to get a lot of the analysis that we end up using here on Pro as well. Matthew, welcome here for your first time in the Box Office Podcast. Happy that after so long we can get you in here.
Hey, Dan, I really appreciate it. It's a mashup. It's Deadpool and Wolverine together at last.
That's what we're doing. Well, I'll take the comparison to Hugh Jackman. Why not? Well, let's talk technology, Matthew, because obviously anyone working in the cinema industry, when they think about digital innovation, when you think about leaders in this space, you have to bring up Vista. Because, of course, when we think about exhibition specifically and we think about technology, we might first think about, let's say, premium large format or projection. Makes total sense. But the real digital revolution, let's say the digital transition 2.0, happened on the software side, happened on the point of sale side, happened on the business intelligence, on the data analytics side. And in that sense, in my view, in this industry, there is no other company that compares to Vista. You guys are a leader across every single sector when we're talking about this digital revolution, a number of brands, and those evolutions keep on coming. We're going to be talking about everything that Vista is coming into CinemaCon with. Let's start with, I think, the new-ish product, because it's been a couple of years since you guys launched the Vista Cloud, which for me is a before and after point when I look at the history of your company. For those of you that might not really know too much about VistaCloud, I'm going to put Matthew on the spot. Matthew, beyond marketing terms, how would you describe the VistaCloud concept to our listeners?
Look, it's really the future of cinema. It takes a lot of the heavy lifting and burden off our exhibitors' shoulders, and we shoulder that for them so that they can focus on what they're best at, you know, delivering outstanding entertainment experiences. And for those of your listeners that knew Vista as an on-prem provider, what we like to say is that VistaCloud is reassuringly familiar yet radically superior. So it's all the elements that made Vista helpful to run a cinema operation efficiently and effectively, but done in a much better way in terms of it being faster and simpler and smarter. And all our latest innovations are being cloud optimized so that when clients begin that journey and they can take that journey at their own pace and path, they don't have to jump all the way to the end. There are incremental steps that suit their own risk appetite, their own operational imperatives. But when they move along that journey, it unlocks and powers up their ability to run their cinemas at a cutting edge level. So that as well as having pristine sound and sight in the auditorium, that whole journey to the screen for their guests is exceptional as well.
Yeah, it's a fantastic piece of technology that you guys have developed there in Vista. And Vista is a company with so many moving parts, right? You guys are involved in box office tracking with a company like Numero. You're involved in the distribution scene with Max. Obviously, we know you guys as a point of sale provider. And with so many different aspects of the company, I think one of the greatest evolutions that you guys brought in, also very recently, if I'm not mistaken, last CinemaCon, was a new feature called OneView. Can you tell us more about OneView and what it is and how you're positioning it for CinemaCon 2024?
Yeah, thank you. OneView is a mobile app, and it allows users to understand their performance at the circuit level and then all the way down to the individual showtime level. So it comprises a few different elements when you come into the app. It's got a home screen that summarizes key operational metrics. So you've got box office and food and beverage, labor, as well as the top movies. And the idea is that you can dip in and out throughout the day and not have to go any deeper. But if you do want to understand the depths of your circuit, you can go to the location tab and look at every site in your circuit and drill down right to the individual movie showtime level. Or you could pivot and come in the other doorway, which is the movie tab. And that's a deep dive into every film showing right down to the showtime. And we've added pre-sales as well, which kind of surprised me how hard it was for a lot of cinemas to get pre-sale data. But there's a tab that has every film on sale but not on screen yet that they can analyze. We've got a release calendar, and all of these data points can then be compared to the prior week, the prior year, and the exhibitor's own budget. So it can be uploaded into the app and they can see how they're tracking to their own performance standards that they've set for the year. But what we've just done and what we're bringing into CinemaCon is the end of phase one with the introduction of a new tab that allows users to look at their loyalty programs, their subscription programs, be it free or paid, and understand what their known moviegoers, their members, are contributing to the overall business. So they can see whether the loyalty membership is healthy and robust and whether it's taking a bigger share of admissions. And the other thing that we're demonstrating, we just did it at our Vista conference, which you guys were kind enough to attend as well and make the trek down to New Zealand, but we're showing at CinemaCon as well, is an artificial intelligence or AI-generated daily podcast that we generated in conjunction with Microsoft that allows users to understand their own business and listen to it rather than scour tables and charts.
So it's like an audio review of everything that is happening in your complex, right? Or in your entire circuit. Now, when we use the word podcast, it's important to say this isn't something that is going to be broadcasting proprietary information to anyone that wants to subscribe. It's specifically to the executives that want a quick audio review of their operations on a daily basis.
Yeah, you and I still have a job with our podcasts. What this
is... Yeah, I was going to say, we're still good here.
I've got to say, it sounds better than me with my thin, reedy Aussie accent. But here's the idea. We wanted the OneView app to be useful the minute a cinema executive woke up in the morning. And you can see the video here, Dan. I'm bald and clean shaven. So the first thing I do each day is shave 360 degrees of my head. So I can't look at an app. My wife's doing something similar with makeup beside me. And so we then go to the kitchen, racing around, getting the kids ready, and then there's the commute to work. So if we wanted to be useful to senior executives the minute they woke up, we knew that couldn't be text or visual. had to be audio. And so this app scours the tables for each exhibitor's own data, generates a script on its own, and then takes that script and turns it into voice. And we were able to demonstrate it in English and then put it through AI and turn it into Spanish. And so it will ultimately be multilingual as well.
Now, we have to look at also the reasons on why you guys went in and developed something like OneView. And that's what I love about Vista, where every innovation you guys do across any of your divisions, it's not, we have the new product, let's sell it and forget it. It's how do we improve it? Year over year, this is something that I think sets Vista apart from many other companies in this industry. How did this come about only a year or two removed from the lift that Vista Cloud ended up being?
Look, we looked at our suite of products and we realized that, as you mentioned, the tech is used by more exhibitors globally than anyone else. But within each of our clients, we'd not developed anything specifically to look after the needs of CEOs and their senior executive teams. These executives have a lot more sophisticated and different requirements than our most common users, who tend to be frontline cinema staff and support office managers. And so what we wanted to do was compile data that we drew from the wealth of their own information and make it available in real time and turn that raw data into something insightful so that we can set them up for success. And so what we looked at was all the data that we hold on their behalf and tried to bring it together and tell a story that was useful for them.
And what do you think makes something like OneView special when you look at all of the innovations that you guys have across the Vista product line?
Yeah, look, for me, it's that it unites moviegoer and cinema operational data in one place, and it does it in the context of each exhibitor's market. And it does it by uniting what was, up until pretty recently, disparate Vista companies. There was the Vista Cinema product, Movio, which is big data and analytics and loyalty, and Numero, which looks at the marketplace. We brought all that together. And when I talk about it being a story, on the homepage, you can see tiles, movie posters for key releases. And in one place, let's say it's Dune Part 2, the exhibitor can see their own box office and admissions. That's coming out of Vista. We then apply our Movio algorithms to it, and we tell the exhibitor how many people in their loyalty database should see Dune Part 2 but haven't yet. So we're showing the opportunity to drive more box office. And then we bring Numero into it and show the exhibitor their market share. So they might look at Dune Part 2 and say, our market share is 17%, but for Part 1 it was 18%. We're not getting our fair share. But Movio is identifying 200,000 people who should see it. We can contact them through our loyalty program. They're sitting there waiting to be enticed through our front doors. So all of that happens in real time. We knew that we couldn't have a lag for the information. Our industry moves far too quickly. It's shareable. So if a CEO sees that opportunity I explained with Dune Part 2, they can click a button and communicate with their colleagues via email, SMS, whatever their social platforms are for internal comms like Teams or Slack, and get the opportunity moving. And because of its forward-looking, they are opportunities. It's not looking in the rearview mirror at opportunities lost. It's the chance to attract more people and drive more box office.
Matthew, you've been heavily involved with Movio for a number of years. I think this is a leading data analytics solution for our industry. And we can talk about backward-looking stats all day, opportunities lost, but it's identifying the opportunities moving forward with that data where the real true value comes in. So talking about all of this, what are some of those features that you're also really excited to bring in this? It's basically a command center, right? OneView, bringing in everything from the Vista family in a very easy to use and very easy to reference solution.
Yeah, I like that command center reference. The one we've also used, just to lean back into our Marvel tip of the hat at the beginning of the podcast, is if a CEO is Tony Stark, if they are Iron Man in their own business, this is Jarvis. This is the heads-up display helping them out and telling them what to do and keeping them safe and on the right track. So that's kind of how we leaned into it. Aside from the podcast, which is setting executives up for the day by hearing what they should dive deep into when they get to the office, there are two things that I'm really excited about. One is a concept called selling out. You know, our industry looks at occupancy, the percentage of seats that have been used and sold for prior sessions. But again, that's backward looking. What selling out looks at is all sessions currently on sale for movies in theater and pre-sales as well. and it creates an alert whenever the occupancy of an individual showtime exceeds 75%. Now, that can be configured, but that's the out-of-the-box threshold. And that then means that the exhibitor has an opportunity to put on additional showtimes or switch auditoriums and make sure that they don't disappoint their moviegoers who can't buy tickets to their preferred showtime and leave box office on the table. So that's one of my favorite forward-looking ones. And the opportunities that we talked about, which is the algorithm that looks at what movies people should see but haven't. Because again, there's an opportunity to hit up the marketing team to get personalized and customized Movio campaigns out and turn an opportunity into a reality. So I love that forward-looking stuff that allows moviegoers to see what they should see and then helps our exhibitor clients out with boosted box office and food and beverage.
No, I do want to go back to the podcast real quick because I think it's a fantastic idea having this audio review of how your business is doing in real time, not how it was doing last week, not how you think it'll do 3 weeks from now, how it's doing now. Could you give us a use case example of how that OneView podcast can help an exhibitor get their head around what's immediately ahead of them?
Yeah, again, it's surfacing the most important things. The app itself is designed to be easy to use, to dip in and out. But even so, we know people are on the move very quickly. And sometimes they literally cannot look at something. Hopefully they're not doing it while they're driving, for example. And we wanted to distill everything into the most salient 2 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes of their business and let them hear it while they're on the go and effectively build their to-do list for the rest of the day, what they need to do themselves, what they need to delegate to their teams. And so what we did is partner with Microsoft. And it's this, look, I'm not tech. I'm more from the business side of things. So I'm easily impressed. But this one was impressing the most, hardened and cynical people. It looks at all the underlying data tables and it creates a script from that automatically. It then turns that script into audio. It can do it in various accents. We've demonstrated it in English and then flicked a switch and turned it into Spanish. So it's multilingual, as we mentioned as well. And so it's meant to be as accessible as possible. Short, sharp, hear it while you're walking around, hear it in your native language, and know what you've got to do next when you get to the office or can talk to your colleagues.
So having that in mind, how do you think that the OneView app and the podcast that is part of it can transform the way that the cinema business works?
This industry is moving faster and faster, and it's all about data. And I think that over the past decade or so, the exhibitors have had more access to data operationally, but also their loyalty information by building more robust and vibrant loyalty programs. But often data is sat in different repositories, so different databases, and being accessible to different people. The phrase I sometimes use is people have eaten what they killed. So marketing data, loyalty data sat with marketing. Operations didn't see it. Vice versa, ops data relegated
data
to the marketers.
And this is a huge, huge issue in the industry. Exhibition talks about it all the time. Distribution talks about it all the time. It doesn't matter if you have all the data in the world. If no one's looking at it, if you can't make actionable insights with it, why are you even collecting it?
Absolutely. And look, the data silos that you mentioned between exhibitors and distributors are one thing, but they happen between departments of the same business.
Right.
And so what we want to do is unite that for our exhibitor clients and allow the stories to be told. You know, just to reiterate with the loyalty tab, it's surprisingly rare that a lot of exhibitor clients know what percentage of their business is coming from their loyalty programs because they're different systems. By bringing it together now, they can say, is loyalty working the way it should be? Are we giving away the farm by being too generous? Or are we not giving the right sort of incentives to drive the behavior we seek? And we can track that to our overall business. Are we cannibalizing ourselves or are we growing the pie? And so that's one of the key things that we're looking at is how we build ecosystems on from the data that we're privileged to hold on behalf of our clients.
How do you see OneView developing in the coming years?
Look, we see it as an ecosystem. At the moment, it is a mobile app aimed at CEOs and senior executives. And that was the audience we wanted to hit first. But we see it as a three-stage pyramid. The next stage down is going to be decision support for regional managers and department heads at the support office, heads of marketing and so on. And the idea here is that if a CEO sees something of importance or hears it on the podcast and hits up one of their managers and says, hey, can you fix this? Can you do more of it? Can you explain it? There is a visual on desktop for those reports to be able to dive deeper into it, because we understand CEOs will rarely do the deep dive analysis themselves. They'll identify the need and then ask people to help them out. And then the third and bottom tier of our pyramid is frontline. How do we help cinema managers, those at the coalface, to have a single stream of data that goes all the way through the business, one view of the business, but also then have it tailored to, you know, being in the cauldron of serving moviegoers in real time. So it'll be that ecosystem that goes from the most senior person in the business to, in a lot of ways, the most important, the ones who interact with guests.
Now, I want to close up this conversation by going into a term that I think is misused, mm-hmm. that some people might be scared by, that some people might be alienated by, but I think mostly because it's been misunderstood. Now, 3 years ago, we were talking about Bitcoin transforming how we would pay things at the cinema. I think maybe there were conversations there that didn't make too much sense. Then we talked about NFTs, how that was going to be a future with everything. AI seems to be thrown into that conversation, but I think unfairly, because AI mm-hmm. means something very different than some of these other terms in the digital world that we've heard in the past. But there are people out there that are throwing out this term AI in ways that don't really make sense. So when we talk about leading companies like Vista, and we talk about products like OneView that are coming out, when you use the term AI, I'm very interested, because I know when you're not trying to sell me something when you bring up AI. I know there's actually something data-driven behind your use of the term. So let's talk about that. What role do you see AI playing in the business going forward?
Yeah, I don't think you could be more correct in your assessment there, Dan. We joke about it being a drinking game. Every time somebody says AI, we take a shot, because it's that sort of consultant speak. But what we've said is, in our business, we want it to be practical and business oriented. So, you know, the OneView podcast is an example of that. It's something that we thought is useful. It has a benefit for people. We're not looking at moonshots on the one hand and gimmicks on the other. We're trying to make people's days better. So that podcast is one example. But on the Movio side, we've created a feature called First Draft that's in beta at the moment, and it writes the text for emails. And so one of the challenges that we often see is, as you get the ability to personalize your loyalty database and the way you treat the members within it, that's great, but you don't have time in your day to do one-to-one variants of emails to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. So being able to draft the text for each person in the tone of your own brand, and then dynamically insert images, which is another layer to it as well, is another practical example of, we've given you the ability to personalize, and now we've given you the ability to scale. We have a data science team, and they've looked at the propensity algorithm, which is people's likelihood to see movies, and that drives the opportunities that I was talking about earlier, but also similarities. And the similarity algorithm, which I love, is it comps movies not by tone and content and cast, but by the audience. So instead of looking at the screen and saying, hey, that movie has a story and walks and talks similar to another one, what they're doing is a 180 degree in the auditorium and looks at the audience. And mm-hmm. where that's really powerful is, you know, if you look at a horror film and comp it by the tone and content, you're going to come up with a bunch of other horror films. If you look at the audience, it acknowledges that people have diverse tastes. And for example, we find that there's an overlap between edgy horror films, edgy superhero films like Deadpool, and gross out comedies as well as, you know, Jackass style films. So by looking at the audience, all of a sudden we've looked at them as multidimensional and can do better targeting. We've got a new algorithm that we talked about at Vista conference that we're looking to bake in at the moment, that looks at customer lifetime value and churn, and with accuracy can predict which people are likely to come to the cinema in the next quarter. So you can change and intervene and make sure that those who might be at risk of dropping off come back in. And we look at it to help film buyers with scheduling and holdovers in another sense as well. So look, none of those are curing cancer or putting a rocket to the moon. But what they do is help each of the different people within the cinema business have a better, more effective day and serve their guests better. And that's our objective with AI. We don't want it to be gimmicky. And we know that there's a lot to be had with everyday uses, practical uses And that's what we're striving to do.
And I think that's also a great way to describe the work that you guys do over at your podcast, Behind the Screens, comes out every Tuesday. You're not looking to make connections between films. You're trying to make connections between audience segments in a way that that's actionable for the exhibitor. There's a lot of podcasts. There's a lot of media outlets out there where you can learn about movies. It's wonderful. What you guys are doing, very much complementary to what we're doing here.
100%.
We're trying to understand audiences. Because that's what counts for our clients and our readers and our listeners. It's who's coming through your doors and how you can better engage with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think the two are complementary. Yours is one of the first listens I have as soon as it hits my Apple Podcast app. And, you know, we go right into the numbers. We're a little nerdy in that sense. I think the narrative and the broader perspective you bring is a really good 1-2 punch for people. So with our two podcasts plus an exhibitor's own AI-generated OneView one, they've got their playlist for the week.
It'll be an exciting week for the executives, for their partners and families. Maybe not so much. Maybe they put their headphones in, listen to something else. Understood. We don't take it personally here, Matthew. We get it. But Matthew Liebman, thank you so much for joining us here on the Box Office Podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And that was Matthew Liebman, the Chief Product Innovation and Marketing Officer at Vista Group. A huge thank you to Matthew and to our partners at Vista Group for supporting the Box Office Podcast. The Box Office Podcast will return once again next weekend with the first of our special CinemaCon series of episodes that is going to follow us into a daily week of episodes in Las Vegas, where Rebecca and I will be bringing you the latest updates from the event. So don't forget to subscribe, rate, listen, share, tell people that we're doing this. And if you're a vendor in this space, don't forget to advertise. It's the easiest way to make sure that we continue doing what we do. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.